Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
This is Radio Influence. The future is now.
I got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow.
Hey, you think it's a mission? And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, as always, joined by my co-host, Daniel Galvan, who, Daniel, I've seen you're big now into Insta stories. And what's this you drinking hot sauce out of the tube?
Well, first off, I'm a Mexican, but not only am I Mexican, but I am from Texas. So I just had to represent not only myself, my state, because clearly the state was not going to represent itself quite well when it had the eyes of UFC fans on them. As it happened, this past, there are some gripes I have with the commission as well as the fans in attendance. But just be glad, Jason, that on my Instagram story, you didn't have to worry about the PR disaster of me showcasing a blunt in my hand and then putting it in my mouth. Just be glad that didn't happen.
I would love to be able to fly on the wall in the production truck. Who comes running in yelling, "Different camera, different camera!"
I know, especially – actually, maybe this was Bellator, but I remember one time there was a camera shot of either the UFC or Bellator broadcast where, like, the entire thing was super blue, and they just did not change the camera until the camera, like, white balanced it, and it was completely white. But, yeah, that must have been insane. Can you imagine being a young child with your parents? So you walk into the arena, and you're at the show, and there are two different awkward moments between that child and that mother or father where, one, the child asks, like, "What does Nate Diaz have in his mouth?" And two, "What does Derek Lewis mean by going deep?" Like, both of those things are going to be super troubling for the parent.
I don't know if you noticed this, but because I looked the next morning to see if they were actually going to post Derek Lewis's post-fight interview. Mm-hmm. And they actually left the Bellator part in. This was on the UFC YouTube channel. But of course, they took out the the very last couple of lines from Derek Lewis.
Excuse me.
He's a national treasure. First off, national treasure.
I know, he really is. All I could think about watching that fight was how glad I was. Glad I am that he didn't retire due to the back injury, because he is so entertaining. He's a freaking great heavyweight. But just when you put a live mic in front of his mouth, you don't know what he's going to say. He's probably going to say something that's going to make you feel uncomfortable, but it's going to make you laugh. And it is funny because, like, it's like the UFC had to choose which they were going to cut, because if they cut both parts of the interview, they would be left with about 5 seconds. It was a wacky night.
I'm shocked they didn't cut out the Bellator line. I'm shocked. Because it was like
the beginning of the sentence, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those things, and I tweeted this. I said, I guess Derek Lewis didn't get the memo. You can't say the B word on a UFC broadcast.
Yeah, I guess it's just, I don't know. I mean, I would imagine that the UFC doesn't have a vice grip on every single thing that they put out, because there's so much content they put out. But it wasn't the worst PR disaster I think we saw on social media. Oh, did you see that J.J. Redick thing where Chinese New Year?
I saw the blurb out, but I didn't read it.
It was really bad. And it sounded like J.J. Redick said J.J. Redick was supposed to say "Happy Chinese New Year," and essentially what he said happened was he was saying "Happy Chinese New Year," but he stopped when he was saying Chinese, and he's like, actually, let's redo it where I say "Happy New Year" to NBA fans in China. So they have two different takes, and the guy that was editing this video, this is what I see watching the video, did this crazy thing where he took like the first quarter of the first take of what JJ said, did an awful transition and then used the second half. And the way it came out made it seem like J.J. Redick said a racial slur. Moral of the story is between this and people posting videos on UFC, the people that are in charge of putting out these videos, Jason, have to be individuals that are lowly paid, I would assume. I would assume, right? Like, these are the guys lowest on the totem pole, so...
Yeah, you have to imagine that, but we do got a jam-packed show coming up for you this week. Of course, we're going to take a look back at that UFC card from Sunday, UFC Fight Night 126. Also, go back to last Friday night, Bellator 194, plus we will preview this weekend's UFC on Fox 28. Also going to have three interviews for you here on the podcast. You're going to hear from Russell Doane, who fights on Saturday at UFC on Fox 28. Also, we'll have two interviews with fighters who will be fighting at UFC 222, Andre Sukumthaw and Cody Stamann. Plus, we'll get into some listener questions and some MMA news, talk about the story that I broke on Sunday about fighters who are no longer under contract with Bellator. Daniel, I feel like as we're recording this podcast, this is almost a little therapy for me, man. Baseball season's already over for me. It's already over. I guess I got fantasy baseball to look forward to, by the way, my fantasy team name is Rays. I think I'm going to have to look to see what team names are available.
I can't believe your fantasy team name is just the name of your favorite team.
Well, all the teams in the league, you are a MLB team. And when I came in, I inherited the team that was the Rays and just never changed it. But I guess, time to change. Because, I don't want to come into a season of fantasy baseball where, you know, people just think they can, give me nothing for all my star players.
Yeah, that is what it's like being a Tampa Bay Rays fan, Jason. I am very sorry. If you look at your two favorite sports teams, I do feel bad for you, the Orlando Magic and the Tampa Bay Rays. Although I guess you have the Lightning, which are, I believe, very good.
Yeah.
I'm not a big hockey guy. I pay attention.
Good. Yeah, they're very good, Daniel. So
you do have that. You do have that going for you. You have that light in your life. And, well, the thing you have every single week, Jason, is mixed martial arts, whether you love it or hate it. And it feels like each and every week we have like this crisis on our hands, right? Whenever it's not a big time fight pay-per-view, we're always, checking the pulse of the sport. But regardless, this sport keeps on kicking. I don't know how people are making money on this sport, but it keeps on kicking.
I will tell you, as I think back to last weekend, one of my biggest takeaways from the weekend really, in a way, has to do with the fights, but in a way doesn't have to do with the fights is, and we've talked about this on this podcast for a long time, is will there be a point where Bellator is held to the same standard as the UFC? And I felt like we saw that on Friday night. If people were not watching live, just go to Jordan Bream's Twitter account to see the things that he was saying. I saw other MMA media kind of, really questioning a lot of things Bellator, and a lot of it was related to what we saw with Heather Hardy and Hannah Hulleton. Mike Chiappetta had a piece out as well, look, as people who report on the sport, you have to go out there and give your opinion. We're not in the business just to kiss the ass of promoters. And, I think it's great that Bellator is being held to that high standard, but this is my thing on the Anna Hulleton Heather Hardy fight. I don't blame Bellator for making that matchup. On paper, I'm sure the thought process is, hey, we have two highly accomplished boxers. We're going to have a boxing match in an MMA cage with 4 ounce gloves. Clearly, that did not take place. The fight sucked. I don't know if there's a better way really to describe that fight. This is my guess. I think Bellator will get out of the Anna Hulleton business. I had her on the podcast last week, and I'll tell you, I went back on that interview and I remember I asked her the question of like, hey, is this going to be a boxing match in MMA cage? And she's like, well, you're going to have to watch. And of course, after the fact, said, oh, maybe that was her way of telling her. I mean, I understand why her game plan was what it was, but I don't blame Bellator for making that matchup because on paper, the thought process behind it made all the sense in the world.
Yeah, kind of. It was supposed to be an entertaining fight at the very least, right? Like, I say kind of because at the end of the day, both these fighters on paper aren't very don't have resumes that warrant being put on TV, just skill-wise. But on paper, it did appear to be like this could have been a barn burner. You know, I watched this fight after hearing about how poor it was, and it was kind of funny listening to the commentators, you know, the innocent commentators, Shale and Mike Goldberg, kind of hype up this as potentially being a great fight before the bout took place. I'm like, oh, you guys are in for a treat. And it was kind of, I enjoyed some of the commentary, but yeah, this was simply put like one of the worst fights of all time. It's been a while since we've had a bad fight of all time contender. You know, it's been a good time, but this was a bad fight of all time contender. This was just a really bad mix of low level in terms of the skill set displayed by the talent. And then it was mixed also with conservative game plans, especially implemented by Houlihan. But even when Heather Hardy was on the feet, it's not like she was doing a whole lot. And she won this fight, I think, based on the fact that she just moved her hands a little more and was more aggressive as a striker. But neither performance really inspired confidence. And this was so bad and so boring that it was entertaining to me personally watching this on replay, just because I enjoyed the spectacle of such a bad fight.
And this was my text to Daniel. Daniel can confirm this. I text him. This was Friday night, 10:43 Eastern time. I go, here's a tip. Don't even watch Houlihan Hardy.
I know. And you're right. But I love watching these fights at least one time. I loved it when, oh man, it must have been Dan Kelly and Patrick Walsh. I want to say that was the fight. That fight was awful. I loved it. I loved Caleb Starnes running away forever and ever and ever. I want to say Nate Corey. The list goes on some of the true duds, and I love it, but it's not the best thing for the promotion. I thought Chael did a good job, you know, because it's real hard to shit on a fight like that if you're getting paid by Bellator.
That was in the first fight of the night, which was Taiwan Claxton, and I thought Chael did a really good job during that fight of kind of explaining what was going on the ground. I mean, maybe the highlight was actually the text I sent you right before I told you not to watch that fight. Was the dude starting the fight by doing a frog hop, essentially?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. What's this guy's name?
Some prelim guy. I didn't see it live.
I forgot about this guy.
I didn't see it live, but I saw it just coming across my Twitter timeline, and I was like, oh, my God. Is that hashtag That's So Bellator?
Yeah. That was one of the stupidest ideas ever because, like, I totally forgot that happened. That was a truly insane strategy because I don't know what he was going for. Like, if you guys have not seen this, you probably have because he's got a lot of tweets, but, like, he made contact with his opponent with his hands down and his chin out. It was one of the most absurd things I've ever seen, and, yeah. Oh, man. I completely forgot that happened. Yeah, that was definitely one of the highlights of the, like, I don't know who it was. It had to have been one of the guys that got finished.
Look, I'm telling you, when we get to the end of the year and you see all these end of the year, you know, best of the year, that GIF better be in there for best GIF of the year.
Yeah, because I don't think we'll ever see that again. Like, I don't understand what was – that guy trained. That guy went to a training camp and trained and, like, spent a lot of time, I'm assuming – this guy's name is Ron Leon. Oh, he must have lost. He lost against Ross Richardson.
Come on, no.
Yeah, anyways.
I would love to hear the corner audio of as that's going on.
There's no way that guy has a corner, right? Like, there's no way that guy has a training camp. Because if you invested time into training, how could you piss it away by doing a Frogger move? Like, oh, my God. I just wish the guy got knocked out. Like, that would have been the icing on the cake. Yeah, that was really awful. I don't know what to say, man. That was so Bellator. Maybe they should get fighters that don't do that.
But I'll say this about the Bellator card. Watching it live, it was a long watch. You know, look, we're both in media. We understand You know, you got to get the commercials in, but there was just times where they would go to the desk. And first off, I have no idea why you put John McCarthy on the desk. To me, he's much more valuable, you know, as a color analyst, you know, as the fights are going on, especially the fact of the knowledge he can bring to the table in terms of referee and judging and the rules of MMA. But it was a long card to get through. You know, I did like what Tywon Claxton had to say following his TKO win over Jose Perez, you know, being, you know, even though it was a dominating performance from him, I like the fact that he said, hey, I'm disappointed. I want to go out there and have a flashy knockout. Then you had Vadim Nemkov get the win over Liam McGeary, just massive leg kicks where, you know, McGeary's going to have to get cleared by a doctor. The thing with that fight, and we did get a question about Vadim Nemkov I want to get to, but what really was telling me about that fight was, as Liam McGeary is getting his leg chopped, and you know, I know he put on Instagram on Saturday that he fractured his fibula, is the fact that he wasn't changing stances, and that's even something that Shale brought up on the show.
Yeah, it just seemed like it felt like very early on this one was over. Like, it just felt like McGeary wasn't really countering what Nemkov was bringing to the table. It was almost like he was a sitting duck for the brutal leg kicks. And it was kind of a sad sight to see, because, like, my general viewpoint on this fight was, this is a must win or for Liam McGeary, or he has to at least look good in this fight to kind of recertify where he is and that this division hasn't passed him by. But yeah, there really was, to me, watching this fight, Nemkov's plan A worked so well against Liam McGeary, and McGeary just didn't have a plan B, even when a plan B would have put him in a position to have less pain inflicted on his leg. So this was a really bad performance for Liam McGeary, a really good one for Vadim Nemkov, and it was a situation where there's a clear guy on the rise, but what happens there is there's a guy on the down low, and for Liam McGeary, he's got a long road if he wants to get back up to high level contendership in the Bellator light heavyweight division. And you mentioned Tywon Claxton, like, I can't believe he was disappointed in that performance. Not that it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but he dominated Perez and he got a second round finish. I understand his idea is, like, he wants to come out and get flying knee knockouts all the time, which is just an absurd reality. Maybe he should not have changed his name to Air Claxton, just because that's a hard thing to live up to. Yeah. But Tywon Claxton, even though it's rough having guys get their first and second professional fights on television on your main card, he is a fighter at featherweight that's, like, he's a real prospect there for Bellator. That's someone they can at least get excited about. That was, to me, one of the brightest moments of the card, was the Claxton fight.
And the question that we got on Vadim Nemkov came from Teep to the Junk on Twitter. He said, did Nemkov just establish himself as a top light heavyweight? He brutalized McGeary. And he says, if Sambo was easy. I mean, look, I think you have to consider him one of the top, you know, light heavyweights, which we're going to get into, you know, the Bellator roster later on in the podcast when we talked about some of the fighters who are no longer under contract with Bellator. But one of the things that really stuck out to me when I was looking at the Bellator roster on Sunday is the very minimum amount of light heavyweights that are listed on their website. These are the light heavyweights that are listed: Ryan Bader, Stefan Bonner, Phil Davis, Tyree Fortune, Leo Lette, Liam McGeary, Vadim Nemkov, Tito Ortiz, Vanderlei Silva, Jared Trice, and Linton Vassell.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, you might as well take out Vanderlei Silva and Tito Ortiz. Not that, I mean, like, those guys are just, like, Legends division, in my opinion.
And Stefan Bonner.
Yeah, that's another Legends division. So how many is that when you take those three out? How many is that? Eight, and then you got two in the heavyweight tournament.
You got to add King. I mean, I'm sure they probably must have King Mo just at heavyweight, but King Mo would be another one.
Oh, King Mo. King Mo wasn't on there. So, like, when you read that list out, to me, you include King Mo, like, it's just King Mo, Phil Davis, and the champ, Ryan Bader. Like, right now, those are the only three fighters, I guess. I would tell you this. Vassell? I mean, who would you pick between Vassell and him?
I would do Nemkov and Vassell next.
Yeah, that would be a good fight. I think Nemkov may have the better stand-up. Actually, he probably definitely does. That seems like I feel like if he fights Phil Davis is going to wrestle the hell out of him. And just, you don't want to do that if you're Bellator. If you have so few light heavyweights, you got to like protect the guys that have some degree of momentum and have unblemished Bellator record. So I kind of like that, even though Vassell could be a fighter to give Nemkov a Bellator blemish. It's been a bit of a turnaround based on the way kind of Nemkov went. Ended his Ryzen run. Like, he went 2-2 there in Ryzen, but then makes a jump to Bellator, and he just looks great. Winning against Philippe Lins and then Liam McGarry. So I guess Lennon Vassell is the matchup that makes the most sense, just because, like, Phil Davis to me is just a no-go for any rising light heavyweight with potential.
No, I think it would be stupid for Bellator to put a prospect against Davis unless he's got superior wrestling. I mean, I just don't understand why you do that. But, we talked about Heather Hardy and Anna Houlton. The co-main event, Patricky Pitbull. Great post-fight interview by Patricky Pitbull by giving, you know, and I knew he's been fired up kind of about just that whole situation there. TKO win over Derek Campos. Campos had come in with his fight with four wins in a row, but Patricky Pitbull, no question, number one contender. I mean, if for whatever reason Michael Chandler doesn't make it to April 13th, Patricky should slide right in there for a title fight. But just another highlight reel knockout for Patricky.
Yeah, he was kind of conservative early on in this fight. I mean, he allowed Derek Campos to be the aggressor, and that just did not pay off for Derek Campos. I mean, Patricky picked his spot and just unleashed a solid array of strikes to just put away Campos. There was one interesting moment that Chael picked up on, and I may not have picked up on it if Chael didn't mention it, but Campos did this thing where he like dropped down and had his head like right connected to the hip of Patricky. And he didn't attempt the takedown. He just jutted back off. Like, he did not expect to get that close to Patricky. And that's a moment maybe Campos can go back on it with regret that he didn't attempt the takedown to get Patricky back on the ground. Because even though Campos was, I guess you could say, dictating the pace the entire time, it still felt like this entire contest was played exactly where Patricky Pitbull wanted it, on the feet, where he's incredibly dangerous and lethal. And it just felt like another day in the office for Patricky Pitbull. He seems like he's continuing to mature as a fighter. And he just seems almost like a serial killer in the cage who's super calm and is ready to take you out at any instant. Really enjoyed the post-fight interview. If we're giving out an MVP for the card, it's not like Patricky has tough competition here, Jason, but this was Patricky Pitbull's night. He was the most impressive fighter on this card, and clearly he deserves a lightweight championship fight next. It's not even a question.
Yeah, I agree with you. He was the most impressive on this card. Of course, main event, Matt Mitrione gets a majority decision win over Roy Nelson. I thought this fight should have gone to a sudden victory round.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that. I really want to see a sudden victory round. I mean, that was a 10-8 for a 10-8, right? Like round three for Roy Nelson.
I personally would have called it a 10-8, especially since the Mohegan Tribe does have the new unified rules of MMA and the way things are scored. I mean, and that's where I thought John McCarthy came in really key. I don't know how many people kept watching the broadcast, but after the fight was over, they went back up to the desk and, you know, John McCarthy, you know, did kind of discuss it there. And, you know, he kind of, you know, one of the things he mentioned was, you know, as a judge, you're going to be looking at, you know, how much damage was really being controlled there. But I thought it was a 10-8 round. And after the fight was over, I'm sitting there going, man, do I still consider Matt Mitrione the favorite in this tournament, knowing who he has to fight next?
Look, man, you're already locked in on Matt Mitrione.
I know.
So I'm locked in on Ryan Bader. That's my pick.
Seriously. Is Ryan Bader the favorite now?
I've been saying that since day one, Jason, because I think Matt Mitrione's a fine heavyweight, but he doesn't inspire me. And neither does Roy Nelson, neither does Fedor. You know, I'm not saying Ryan Bader inspires me, but he at least appears to still be in his prime, is my whole point.
It was one of those fights of, you know, I mean, Mitrione was landing some hard shots. in those first two rounds. I mean, look, the key for Matt's going to be able to keep this fight on the feet, but when Roy was able to take the fight to the ground, it was, you know, Roy did what Roy can do. And, you know, we'll kind of see what ultimately happens. I will say this. I would love to be on a fly on the wall on Tuesday afternoon when the ratings came in for this card.
Yeah.
I think it says a lot about where MMA is in 2018. You know, it's just not a Bellator thing. We see it in the UFC as well. And, you know, and look, TV landscape has changed over the years. You know, when you look at the amount of people that, you know, have cut the cord or, you know, are finding alternate ways to watch television. Maybe it's a streaming device. I believe a Paramount Network is on the PlayStation View platform, I believe. Maybe I'm wrong, but I believe they are. But it's just, I saw that number. I think my first thought was like, oh my.
Okay. So obviously the number was what? 462,000.
476.
476. What do you think Bellator's brass's expectation was on what it was going to be?
You got to think at least in the 600s.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about going out and spending the amount of money that they pay for Roy Nelson and Matt Mitrione, you know, everything you hear on both guys making into the six figures guaranteed for their fights. It's gotta be a tough bill to swallow. And at the end of the day, you got to get fans excited about the fights. No matter what it is. I mean, look, I am going to the UFC card on Saturday in Orlando. I'm going as a fan. I'm not going as a reporter. I'm going with three of my buddies just to have a good time at the fights. Am I super jazzed up for that UFC card? No. There's some fights and fighters I'm interested to see, but I'm not like giddy about it.
Like none of these fight cards. And we said time again, none of these fight cards have any level of depth to these cards. These are one or two fight cards.
I mean, here's a perfect example. On Friday afternoon, I think it was Brandon Guzman, you know, tweeted me. He said, "Hey, what are the prelim fights to look out for?" And I'm like, Jared Trice, and that was it. I mean, it was a bunch of what I would call baby pros, guys that have one, two, three fights where you make their pro debut. You know, Bellator did not give you a lot of reasons to tune into the preliminary card. I think that's an issue.
I think five fight main cards are a bad idea. I like it when they do four fight cards. God,
I'll tell you, on Sunday night at about 11 o'clock Eastern, I'm sitting there going, oh man, I'm falling asleep at this point. You know, old man Jason over here, you know, I'm getting tired because I wrote a piece on Sunday about these fights. And, you know, and I said, hey, maybe it's my East Coast bias. But, man, why can't this be a four fight main card that ends like at 11 o'clock Eastern time as opposed to midnight Eastern time? But I just, you know, I would think that these TV people would say, hey, four fight main cards are going to do a lot better than and typically Bellator is a four fight main card.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they just ran one the last event. I just think that should be a permanent deal no matter what. I mean, unless you have five great fights, which it's been a while since they've had five great fights. I mean, it's like the problem for Bellator is the same problem for the UFC is like what they need to do is they need to strengthen the Bellator brand where every single time Bellator is on TV, it needs to be appointment viewing because once you – teach your viewers that every Bellator card isn't that important. They're going to skip and then they'll skip and then they will lose interest. You got to get people that are addicted to watching your product. And it's as simple as putting on cards like Bellator 196, like Gallagher, a James Gallagher fight card in Hungary. Something like that hurts your brand because it's not that good of a card. And eventually people just stop caring. And the effects of, I think, some of these cards they ran last year that were just very poor when it comes to name value and did not reward the viewer, that check is kind of coming due as we have these heavyweight fights. And it's as simple as also these cards aren't stacked. Surely the rating would be really good if they had put the all four heavyweight fights on one card. Well, but they didn't do that.
At the end of the day, and we've talked about this countless times, but you have to get your fans excited about sitting at home on a Friday night and watching fights. You know, look, I do marketing for a sports bar. I'll flat out tell you, it doesn't happen often that I get a call on Saturday morning saying, hey, people came in to ask for the Bellator fights. Because I ask that question, you know, because that's part of my job as running marketing is what are people coming in and wanting to watch. And it's, you know, I mean, look, we both know at the end of the day, this sport is all about those three letters. And we're not talking MMA. We're talking the UFC. And, you know, and I will tell you, as Sunday got here, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of excited to watch this fight card, you know, in terms of the main card. You know, and look, Cerrone Medeiros, it lived up to what we thought it would be. Lewis Tybura kind of went the way we kind of saw that one coming. When you start at the Fight Pass prelims, you had two fights that ended in the first round with Oscar and Alex getting the wins there. I mean, Josh Berkman days in the UFC have to be over, right?
Yeah. That was sad. I must say, watching this fight card on replay was like one of the most fun replays I've had in a very long time. We only had four decisions here, and the prelims were great. But yeah, the first two fights on the prelims were just like, oh my god, because on one hand you had Oscar Pajota. Oh man, I gotta learn how to say his name.
I think you got it right there.
It's I think there's some level of silence in his last name, but this guy is got power in his hand, Jason. I mean, he's built like a truck, and he comes across as like the nicest guy ever. I think this was the first time he was in America, and he maintains on being streaked, just putting away Tim Williams. And then Josh Berkman, yeah, this was just like he lost the fight on the feet, rocked, tapped. This was a bad fight, and for Berkman, he earned a spot back in the UFC. Let's not discount kind of I feel like we kind of say, oh, how did he end up back in the UFC? But he lost all but one fight in the World Series of Fighting. So he certainly earned this spot back. This is a veteran of the sport who's been fighting for a very, very long time. But he has now lost five straight fights and three consecutive finishes. And it's just never a good sign when you have a guy like Alex Moreno cut a post-fight interview talking about how it's an honor beating you because you're a legend. That just means you're kind of old.
Think about this. Josh Berkman, since coming back to the UFC in 2015, 1-7 and a no contest.
I know. It's bad.
And that no contest was initially a decision loss to Hector Lombard, which is overturned. I mean, but yeah, you're right. I mean, look, he did go on a very good run there. You know, from, you know, 2009 up into 2014, he had put together a great run there. Of course, I think most notably everyone remembers that win over John Fitch at a World Series of Fighting 3, but man, it's, you know, you got to imagine if he wants to continue fighting, you know, it's probably going to be somewhere, you know, he talked about it. I want to say it was last year at some point. He talked about wanting to have like one more fight in his home state of Utah, maybe for his own promotion. But, he's obviously.
Wow. Did you see that? I'm just looking at his Wikipedia. I this is far less important than what you're saying, but apparently, in 2007, he dated Ariane Celeste.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Apparently, you're out of the MMA gossip loop.
I am. Wow. I was, yeah.
Of course, you're young, you know. God, how old were you in 2007?
I was 6 years old. yeah, that was, wow. That's cool, man.
Yeah, that was only 11 years ago.
Yeah, only 11 years ago, so... You know, I was barely started my first year in college. I spent a lot of time thinking about the ring girls. That sounds kind of weird, but I was just wondering, like, I feel like Brittany Palmer goes to every UFC show. It's
I don't know if you saw this. Shandella Powell was at the event, the fights. Guess she lives in Austin.
Shandella Powell?
Yeah, you might be too young to remember her.
No, I think I know who. Oh yeah, but she's not that old. Like she wasn't around for that long.
She had a little failure to disclose information.
Oh, wait. What was the information?
I can probably hear Dave. He's like, oh, what?
oh, okay.
She forgot to reveal her softcore porn past.
You see, I don't understand, like, how you only do softcore porn, you know? I don't understand how you just don't do the whole thing. Wow, I'm going to do some research. anyways, yeah, wow. You see, when I think of old school ring girls, oh my gosh, I can't remember any of their names. There was the one, her name was Logan something.
Oh yeah, God. I remember you talking about, yeah.
She was my favorite. And then also there was a blonde, somebody married a light heavyweight fighter, Kingsbury. Yeah.
Oh.
Don't know any of their names. That's not good. Logan, UFC ring girl. Natasha Wicks is the one that married Kingsbury. Logan Stanton was the name of the other one. Yeah, Logan Stanton, OG. Moral of the story was two things. I feel like I've seen Brittany Palmer's back tattoo a million times in my life. Like, I just registered it now. But that shot, that camera shot of, like, she looks at the camera and just turns around and you just, like, see her back as she sits in her chair. Like, I can't believe I've seen that scene play out in my life, like, 30 times every UFC. And there's, like, a UFC every week. I just wanted to point that out. And I also want to know, like, are the ring car girls actually entertained by the UFC? Do they have specific chairs? Have they ever not liked each other? How often do fighters attempt to talk to, like, I had so many questions. Anyways, a bit of a tangent there.
but back to the fights. Lucia got the decision win over Sarah Moraes, which was in the first round of that fight. Mm-hmm. That was Jacob Montano was the referee in that fight, and
Montalvo.
Excuse me. Apparently, he hates ground fighting. I think that became pretty clear. It was when that happened that was an awful stand up, by the way. But after that was up, I tweeted, I said, if you are a fighter in the back and Jacob is assigned to your fight, take notes, because he just told you we ain't doing any of that ground stuff.
Did you get any responses to that tweet?
A couple.
I saw that this is a guy. And here's the thing about Jacob Montalvo is he lives literally like within 10 minutes of me. Like, he is a Rio Grande Valley guy. Not only a Rio Grande Valley guy, I'm from Harlingen, Texas, and I believe he has a school here. So I can talk to this guy. Like, I can give him some tips because – you know how hard it is for Jacob Montalvo to build a bad reputation? Because he had it before this fight. Like, he has done this before. He only works shows in Texas. So the spotlight is only on him when the UFC goes to Texas. And he has a reputation. Like, how does that happen? I'm so sad because he's from the Rio Grande Valley. He's one of the two representatives that we had. I think the other one was Carlos Ferreira. But yeah, man, I can go have some coffee with this guy. And what's the most ironic thing is his school is not like an MMA school. I believe he runs the Harlingen Jiu-Jitsu Club. The Jiu-Jitsu Club. He's That's the owner crazy. Of it. And the thing is, like, with the stand-up here, is that totally changed the tide of the fight. Like, I felt like once that happened.
There was no 30-27 scorecards, but you could have almost made the case that could have just swung that round. I mean, look, she was lighting Sarah up on the feet. I mean, that was just Sarah did not have an answer for Lucy on the feet. But man, that was an awful stand up. That was the only thing bad about the TV prelims as. Roberto Sanchez, man, just a beautiful rear naked choke. Pretty much
The Jason Floyd curse. Joby Sanchez.
It was not good last week on the podcast. All three of them lost.
I feel so bad. To be fair to Joby, like, despite the fact that Roberto Sanchez, I think, got tapped out last time out, he is pretty good on the ground, and he just took it down and got the tap, and yeah, it was a quick prelims, man. Jeff Neal looked good against Kamosi, who bad record 7-5, and Carlos Freya was just great. Again, I think he. I don't know if he still trains.
Hey, does in the it Rio pay, Grand does Valley. It pay to cheat?
Hey, man.
I mean, look, and it's joking here, but there is a part of this say.
Yeah.
How much did those two groin shots affect the fight?
It, Jared Gordon really shook off the first one really quickly. Like, I was kind of impressed by his testicular fortitude.
But I've asked fighters about that, and they, a lot of it is you don't want that adrenaline dump.
Yeah, I could see that. I could certainly see that, but also I could see getting hit in the balls. Like, that also hurts. Like that would, I would not be concerned of. I've never been hit in the balls in an MMA fight. I have been hit in the balls. I just feel like that would hurt so, especially by a guy who's a trained fighter. Like, that would just ruin my entire week. But I guess the adrenaline dump is a big deal. And I actually felt like this was the breakthrough call. This was the best call for Jimmy Smith. I really love the way he fangirled over the way Carlos kind of held one arm of Gordon and pummeled away with his ground and pound. I thought I guess this is where we can just give Jimmy Smith props, but I just thought Jimmy Smith was great here. I thought he had a great night, and despite the fact that he's looking like Joe Rogan, he was phenomenal.
I will tell you this. I'm watching those fights, and my first thought – because, you know, he called 221, but I was in a bar, so, you know, you couldn't hear what he was saying. But it's one of those things of I'm listening to him call these fights, and I'm sitting there going, Bellator, you let – if not the best, one of the best MMA color analysts just walk.
Here's the thing about Jim. He's like Joe Rogan, but his voice is way better. He's like aesthetically, he has a great voice.
Look, Rogan's is a polished broadcaster.
He's great, but Jimmy Smith's voice is succulent. Like, it is smooth. It is a smooth voice.
Yeah, I great mean, voice. It's just like it's one of those guys that. I love to listen to Jimmy Smith call fights because I always feel like I learned something.
Yep. I agree with you. And I don't really know what happened to Todd Grisham.
I think he's definitely out of the rotation.
That sucks for him, man. He's a WWE guy, so I like him. But what's his guy's name? Brandon Fitzgerald? Is that his name?
Yeah.
I can't believe I still can't remember his name. He's really good, too. Like, he is... We can get to it, but they screwed up the main event call with identifying Donald Cerrone's grandma as
calling mother. Him Donald's mom.
Well, first it was Yancey's mom, and then Donald's mom. Jimmy Smith, Brandon said it was Yancey's mom, which I can't blame him for assuming like Yancey goes. And but if you watch any Donald Cerrone content or any UFC content, like, she is such a prime. Anyways, they screwed that up. But Brandon Fitzgerald, Jimmy Smith, they get an A+ to me on the broadcast. They were absolutely great.
In terms of this main card, Sage Northcutt with a home state cooking.
I got some Sage thoughts. I got some Sage Northcutt thoughts.
Let's hear them.
I look at Sage Northcutt, Jason, and by God, I heard that this guy was 21 years old 47 times on this freaking broadcast. But I'm starting to have sympathy for Sage. I got so many. This is going to be a long Sage Northcutt discussion between us. I got like 3 points. One, I look at Sage Northcutt and I see myself. You know, I see him because I'm like 22 years old, and I felt like when I was 14 or 15 years old, and you looked at my brain and you're like, this guy knows a lot about sports. He's going to have a big future. Like, he's so young and he knows so much. But as I've aged, Jason, I just haven't progressed at that same rate. You know, I am no longer a prospect. I'm now a Freddie Adu type guy. And I look at Sage Northcutt, and it's like, clock is ticking, buddy. Like, he's like 21. He'll be 22 next year, 23. And he is no longer this super prospect, Jason. I mean, this was he was okay. But you think about the hype and the potential of Sage Northcutt when he first got on the horizon. It's like, he is not progressing at the rate that he is. With that being said, they need to take care of this guy because he is a bona fide star and he needs to fight every single fight in Texas. That's my thoughts.
This was my thing watching the fights. Should his dad still be in his corner, especially when you're full-time training at Team Alpha Male, you know, because you could just see there was a lot of talking. He was talking over Uriah. You know, I mean, if you're the UFC, you look at Sage and I can't imagine that they're still high on him.
Look, when you're the UFC and you have no stars, you've got to protect and coddle every person who has potential. And Sage is a good-looking guy with charisma.
No questions.
And like you listen to that crowd was, I mean, first off, I thought it was kind of a good crowd. They were pretty hot for all the Texas fighters. Granted, I think almost all, yeah, I think all the Texas fighters, except for, I don't know, Brandon Davis or Mississippi, most of the Texas guys won on the main card. So they had a reason to be hot. But dude, Sage Northcutt is a star, but you're like, if this was a different era, they could cut bait on this guy because he's not super great at all. But I just think you got to give this guy easy matchups and you got to have him fight in Texas because you need to create as many stars as you possibly can. But you make a good point. I feel like that had to have been everyone's thought when they show that little box of Uriah Faber on one side and Sage Northcutt's father. And it's like, which of these two doesn't make sense? And the funny thing is Sage's father was so much louder that it almost seemed like he would only respond to his father's instructions and not Uriah Faber's instructions when watching the fight play out. But there is no way Uriah Faber likes Sage Northcutt's dad, right? Like, there is no chance.
No, no. You can't. I mean, how could he?
I don't know. It's like everyone who's watching this season, but it's unfortunately for Sage, I think the big issue is he is just he's in a big bubble. But when it comes to the scorecard, Jason, I did have this for goatee. I thought he won this 29-28. It was a close first round, but it was just something where I thought that Goitie won the third and second round. And it's as simple as that. And I don't really know. I guess it wasn't a robbery. I wouldn't say it was a robbery.
Yeah, it was a close fight. I mean, but I did feel it was a little hometown cooking there. You know, for Sage, I don't know if you saw this.
How did you feel when he called Uriah Faber Mr. Faber?
Yeah, that was a little weird. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, that Mark Dykes is mentioning he'd want to fight with Sage Northcutt. If the UFC hates Sage Northcutt, they'd probably make that fight.
That is the exact opposite of my Sage Northcutt strategy. That is a bad idea.
Yeah, that's a really bad idea.
Sage Northcutt does decent. I guess now his whole game is to wrestle. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, man. It doesn't seem like when I say describe what Sage Northcutt does well, that's a tough question. Like, what would your answer be?
At this point, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a fighter that ultimately, I think I look at him and say he was just rushed to the UFC too quick.
Yeah, the counter is maybe he never would have been ready anyway.
It's tough to be developing your skills in the UFC.
Yeah, and we see how quickly he's been fighting. Yeah.
When it comes to the rest of the main card, Brandon Davis, Steven Peterson, which end up winning fight of the night. Brandon Davis gets a decision win. I thought at the end of the third round that Brandon was going to get the win, but you know, Steven, I don't know how he stayed in that fight.
Yeah, he's a zombie, man. But if you've seen this guy fight, and he's had a lot of Axis and HDNet appearances, like, this guy is crazy, and he just put on his best Walking Dead zombie. I mean, I don't know if this was indicative of Brandon Davis's power, but this was just a high volume night from him. A really enjoyable fight. But yeah, Steven Peterson was just impossible to put away. Although, and he had some offense, but this was a showcase for Davis out of Mississippi. And yeah, to me, the highlight was watching Peterson just bloodied continue to chug along and almost taunt Davis when he got rocked. And it's nice seeing a guy like that get an opportunity on the main card. And Steven Peterson, who never stuck out to me as like a high level prospect, but always a gamer. And it's nice to see guys like that get an opportunity. But, I mean, this was Brandon Davis. This was the Brandon Davis show.
Curtis Milner gets a knockout win against Thiago Alves. I will say this. Two things I'll say about Curtis Milner. A, if you would ask me that he would go on this run after going 1-2 in Bellator, I probably would have said no. B, I love the sportsmanship, but, man, you know, it could have cost him in this fight.
Yeah, yeah. The good thing is he was taking on a guy who was like God, half a foot shorter and giving up 10 inches in reach.
No. How about this one? I'm going to tell you Thiago Alves's UFC wins. Ansar Chengolov, I probably butcher the hell out of that. Derek Noble, John Alessio, Tony D'Souza, Kenoshi Hernaka, Chris Lytle, Carl Parisian, Matt Hughes, Josh Koscheck, John Howard, Poppy Abetti, Seth Pazinski, Jordan Mean, and Patrick Cote. Jordan Mean would be the only one still in the UFC.
Yeah. It's been a long time. It's been a long time since UFC 100.
I mean, look, he's, you know, he hasn't been active, you know, I mean, especially since, you know, really, you look at, you know, since 2012. But man, I saw that when I was watching the fights, I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, man. He looked old here. He looks really old. He looked older than that. I mean, I feel like he's been 34 for five straight years, man. This guy was a top contender in UFC 100. And it's not like he was a young spring chicken. Like, I felt like he was just kind of right in his athletic prime at that point when he took on GSP. And here he is. And,
he's only a year younger than Joe Riggs.
Well, Joe Riggs is the 12th wonder of the world. I mean, that dude is the movie Benjamin Button personified. I thought to me, like, the age was clear, but dude, the size, it was just so crazy watching these two in the same cage. Like, Thiago Alves could not get inside, and it's not fair because, like, a knee from Curtis Millender might as well have been a low kick in terms of what he had to make connection. It just was so easy for him because of how much bigger he was. But yeah, this was really a sobering performance for Thiago Alves because this was a showcase outing for Curtis Millender. I mean, this was a complete turnaround from his Bellator run. And now you got to do some new calculus on what you think about Curtis Millender.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a guy who's completely turned around and to see kind of how he develops. James Vick is unanimous decision win over Francisco Trinaldo. Nice win there by James Vick. You know, we'll see if maybe he finally does get that top 10 fight he's been looking for.
He's not going to get a championship fight, I'll tell you that much.
No.
I thought he cut a good promo afterwards, even though he challenged Ferguson or Khabib, but he has to get a top 10 fight here. The problem for James Vick is inside the cage. This performance against Trinaldo wasn't super inspiring. No one watches this fight and thinks, can't wait the next time this guy steps in there. But he's just trucking along, man. Clearly won round one and round two. Completely gave up on round three. He mentioned he injured his pinky, but that could have been dangerous. This is the state of Texas, you know, unsurprisingly, a state that has not adopted the new rules. And so that was kind of perplexing that a guy who had such a clear skill advantage in rounds one and two just completely gave away the third frame. Still, though, I think his next opponent is going to be on the lower end of the top 10. He deserves a top 10 fighter, but his performance inside the cage didn't dictate it. And this was another fight, much like Alves Millender, that stuck out because of the height disparity between these two. Vick was so much taller. And
huge
at
lightweight.
Huge lightweight, you're right. This guy's definitely going to end his career at 170 whenever, you know. I mean, there's no way. I mean, maybe he does cut 155 his entire career, but there has to be a point where Vick is fighting at 170. It's just, I think he's 6'3", which is just an insane weight, insane height to fight at 155, but it helps out in fights like this where he just becomes like he has such great defense. Opponents just aren't able to do what they want to do against him, and he defends that well and lands enough on offense to win these fights.
Yeah, we'll see what's next for him. Then the co-main event, Derek Lewis, Marcin Tybura. You know, kind of the way a lot of people thought this was going to go is, you know, Derek's going to win this on the feet, and Marcin, if he gets to the ground, he's going to, you know, control Derek on the ground. That's what happened. Derek gets a win. We talked about his post-fight interview after the fact. We did get a question from Brian Guzman saying, who do we see winning in Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou matchup? To me, that's clearly the fight to make. In terms of who you pick, God, do I go Derek Lewis?
I wouldn't, but I could see a case being made for him because, like, Derek Lewis is, look what we saw in this fight. against Marcy and Tibera. He got beat up in round two. He got beat up a bit in round one, but in round three, he got back up, got the knockout. What does that tell you? This guy is a survivor, and he has power in his hands, and he has the ability to knock anybody out, even if he's gassed. Now, what did we learn against Francis Ngannou versus Stipe Miocic? Well, we learned that Francis may not be super great in round two and on. So that, to me, is the advantage Lewis has. Even though you don't look at Derek Lewis and think that this guy can run a marathon, he certainly doesn't have great cardio. But even when he's gassed, his hands are so dangerous that that could be a threat for Ngannou. But I would still pick Francis Ngannou in this fight because I just think I think Francis, unless he's taking on a world beater like Stipe Miocic or maybe Cain Velasquez and Fabricio Werdum, other than that, I think he knocks his opponent out or finishes them with his heavy hands in one round.
Yeah, I mean, but clearly to me, that is a fight to make. On another heavyweight point, Brandon also asked us where we would have Matt Mitrione in the UFC rankings if he was still in the roster. For me, 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there probably.
Let me give you a specific answer. I mean, look, I can't believe I saw this question. It slipped my mind. I would definitely put him. Okay. I don't know where I would put him in the rankings, but I'll tell you who. Okay. I think Matt Mitrione, I would favor him over Andrei Arlovsky in a fight. Although, that being said, I think I might take Ty Tuivasa against Matt Mitrione, but that's just because I'm high on him. But I guess 11. Or 12 is where I would put Mitrione. I guess I could see Mitrione beat Stefan Struve also. I would go 10. I would put Mitrione at 10, right?
You know, lower top 10. I mean, that's where he would be.
Yeah, I would go specifically number 10. That would be my pick, but you're right. That's funny. When you think about some of these fighters, like, had Phil Davis stuck around, would this be a guy who is light heavyweight champion right now in the UFC?
Man, light heavyweight's awful right now.
I know it is. I mean, Cormier is a solid fighter, but, you know, he's not a world beater like John Jones.
Here's the crazy thing. OSP wins on Saturday. Do you rule it out that they do OSP Gustafsson for the interim title?
It pisses me off that they're going to do an interim title, but I guess you got to if you're doing Cormier Stipe. Yeah, I think that's the fight. Like, yeah, OSP, man. It's a real smart move to fight Yushin Okami. Like that just boosts the win streak, and it was an easy opponent. And I think that's what you got to do, man. And it just pisses me off that you got to do interim title. But I guess who's more pissed than me is Gustafsson. And it's like he probably won't step into the cage. Just got a belt to wrap around his waist with a win. But that's got to be the fight to make, man. Like, light heavyweight is a graveyard.
Yeah, it is. Main event of the fight night card was Donald Cerrone and Yancy Medeiros. And I don't know if you saw this on the Made Junkie where Yancy joked after the fact, man, where's Mario Yamasaki when you need him?
I did see that. Poor Mario Yamasaki. That stoppage was fine. I mean, dude, like, Yancy Medeiros did not get his hands up until after the fight was stopped. So I do not complain. I would not complain about this stoppage, but I did think it was funny. And it's poor Mario Yamasaki. That's got to be the way people think about it. But, like, when Yancy got rocked, man, he landed head first. And then, like, Cerrone stood over him, and he just had his hands by his side. So this dude was out.
Oh, yeah. It was clear. you know, I – you know, with Cerrone, you know, obviously it's a great knockout, but, you know, I don't think it was, you know, it wasn't an A performance by him.
It was okay, man. I thought Yancy had a good chance of winning this fight. And because Cerrone had lost three in a row, just getting your hand raised is like an A for me. Just because, like, it almost felt like Donald Cerrone was on a tightrope here. In that a bad performance here, he then goes super downhill, like super bad. He is probably no longer ranked, or maybe ranked 15. But because of the win, it's almost like he returns to being a part of the conversation now at welterweight. So that's why I would say it was a positive. I thought Yancy's stand-up looked pretty good up until he got knocked out. Like, he has such crisp striking. But Daniel Cerrone just looks like a guy who's been in the saloon one too many times, and he knows he's experienced. So I thought it was not something I knew going into it, but I thought it was so shocking that Daniel Cerrone is now tied for the most wins in the UFC with 20. Like, that to me is not a stat I would have thought, just because a pretty big portion of his MMA career was spent in another promotion. Like, the fact that he has got a record like that inside the UFC is insane to me. And now he's still kind of like holding on to his prime. He's surely gonna break the record.
Yeah, yeah. It just shows you how active he has been. So that is what happened last weekend at UFC Fight Night 126, Bellator 194. I do want to get into a listener question before we get into UFC on Fox 28 and my interview with Russell Doane. This came from Joe in H-Town, where he says, and Daniel, I think this was a good question for you. At what point does the MMA media stop covering Ronda Rousey's every little move with the WWE?
No, it's never going to. Oh, wait. That's an interesting question.
As long as he gets web clicks, it'll never stop.
Yeah. Man, I wonder if it will happen if she becomes a normal WWE wrestler and like wrestles every week. I mean, she probably won't wrestle every week because she's got to make crappy movies. But like, at some point, it's no longer a news item, because there's a chance that she will just be on WWE television every single week. I mean, you're going to see it on Monday. She's going to perform on the WWE pay-per-view doing some, you know, a skit where they sign a contract. But look, these MMA websites, man, they're trying to make some money. And it's the same reason why you're going to see provocative headlines, or you're going to see stories about fighters that are big names loosely associated with the sport. I mean, look at some of the headlines we saw. And I'm not criticizing these headlines, because it's what you got to do. But look at some of the headlines we saw this week centered around Heather Hardy, the Heather Hardy fight in the UFC. We saw a Brent Brookhouse article, that smart headline, but it was something like, oh, I need to just look up these headlines. I don't want to misquote them. But they were like super dramatic, right? It was the Brent Brookhouse article was, is the UFC just an aging Gen X fad? I mean, that's a good headline. I wonder if this sport might be dead. And then Mike Chiappetta had an article. What was the name of that one?
The thing that surprises me about what I see on MMA media websites, and look, and I get that you got to put things up there that's going to get clicks. I get it. I understand it. You got to pay the bills, but it's, there's a lot of articles that I see that I'm like, what's the point? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the headline for the Chiappetta article was, what you're seeing on your TV is a sport in the midst of a midlife crisis. That's pretty dramatic. But yeah, I wouldn't throw either of those two in that, and the one you just threw there. Like, we see it with some of these websites where it's just, at some point you got to class it up with your articles, and it's clear you're just thirsty for clicks. And the worst ones is like, you see these salacious headlines or these stupid headlines, and then the article's like three paragraphs long. That's like the worst part, because you just feel like you got hoodwinked.
Yeah, yeah, it's you know, but you gotta do it. What gets the clicks, Daniel? That's the name of the game. But UFC on Fox 28 is coming up this weekend in Orlando. As I mentioned, I will be there. Before we get into this card, I want to play you my interview that I did recently with Russell Doane, who's going to be a part of this fight card. So here is my conversation with Russell Doane. Russell, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Of course, you got this fight coming up here this weekend, UFC on Fox 28, taking on Hani Yahya. Of course, fans will be able to watch this fight, a part of the Fight Pass prelims. Really appreciate the time, man. How's things been going?
Fantastic. You know, I appreciate you having me on. Out here in California, I'm living it up. I'm having the time of my life, being a fighter and just taking things in.
One of the things, I was looking at your Instagram feed, and one of the things that you posted was a picture from you know, a recent fight you had where they're introducing your name, and you said, I crave this. No drug can replicate this kind of high. Is there any way you can explain to the MMA fan out there of what that feeling is like when you're in the cage and you're getting ready to compete?
It's insane. Like it's almost indescribable, you know. I don't know, the adrenaline rush, all of it, it just takes you to a whole new world. Especially like, so one of my favorite things is of course knocking people out. And once you see their eyes roll back, once you see them fall, like you just like, oh man, your adrenaline spikes, your blood goes crazy, everything. It's just so indescribable.
What's your favorite knockout?
Favorite knockout? Let's see. Man, that's a hard one. I'm gonna guess it's Kwon Ho Kwak, the most recent one. Uh-huh. Because, you know, that's when I adjust. It's the first time I ever really adjusted myself. I adjusted myself to the pressure and whatnot. You know, I instead of coming out guns blazing, I took my time and I had a nice slower start where I could feel him out, and to me that's just the learning process. Usually I come out guns blazing, all crazy and whatnot. And I never really adjust. This time I started nice and slow. I let him think he was, you know, I let him think he was kicking my ass, but really I was just taking my time and I was finding his timing, finding his speed. And then I went and that was it.
You know, I fully understand that no matter what's going on in your career, you know, there's pressure in every fight, and every fight's a must win. But going into that last fight, did you feel anything different heading into that one, you know, because of what happened in the previous couple fights?
If I could be honest, that was the first fight, the first time that I hated my opponent. I mean, nothing personal, but I mean, I didn't hate him as a person, but he was stopping me. You know, he was, that's the first time I ever, anytime anyone was like, oh, hey, oh, what do you think about Kwon Ho Kwak or whatever? Like, fuck that guy. Fucking, you know, that's the very first time. Like, I just wanted to hurt him. I wanted to finish him. But normally, like, you'd ask me, oh, how's that guy? Oh, he's good. He's, you know, he's a nice guy. He's this. No, I hated him. It was different. It was different that time because I knew he was what's between me and my future, my career.
So do you hate Aniyaya right now?
I do. The nice, you know, I know he's a veteran. He's a very nice guy. You know, he's a very respectful guy, and I have no disrespect towards him, but I'm going to hurt him, and I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to win this thing, and I'm going to implement my game plan, and I'm going to stop everything he thinks he wants to do, and I'm going to finish him. I'm going to finish him. If for whatever reason he survives all the way through the third round, take a picture of him, because he's going to be broken and battered.
I think a lot of people will probably consider you the underdog in this fight. Is that a role you like, that people are counting you out?
Underdog, overdog, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter because we go in there and he has his game plan. I have my game plan. Underdogs win all the time. You know, the favorites win all the time. It doesn't matter a whole lot, you know, what the books say, because everybody knows on any given night, anyone can win. You know what I mean? The person with the best game plan, the person who implements their game plan the best, this and that, yada, yada. But I'm going out there and I'm going to take this. I'm going to take this from him. I'm going to take this, and people are going to start making me the favorite again.
I've talked to a couple of guys about this recently where, you know, they've been the quote unquote betting underdog. And I asked them, I said, have your friends ever bet on you? And then once they cash that ticket, do you feel like, okay, don't I deserve a little cut of this since I went out there and did the hard work?
No, I mean, it's whatever. I mean, I always have, like, my friends will always bet on me. But, you know, it's my job to go out there and make them winners.
In terms of when people think about Hani, you know, obviously they think about his submission game. You know, break down his submission game. What really sticks out to you of why, you know, he is so good on the ground?
He doesn't stop. He goes and he goes. If he takes a shot on you and he fails, he doesn't break away. He keeps trying to grab you and drag you down and you know what I mean? Get his grubby mitts on you. And he really sticks to his game plan. And his game plan is the ground. You know what I mean? No matter if he tries to strike, he wants it on the ground. And he'll do everything he can to get there. And if you're not able to stop it, then it's going to be a long-ass night. Fortunately for me, I'm going to stop every single shot he takes.
Is there all a part of you that would want to beat him on the ground? Like that competitive spirit? I mean,
Of course. Who doesn't want to do that? You know what I mean? Who doesn't want to be the guy that submits Hani Yahya or like a Damian Maya or like things like that? The guys who are so well versed on the ground and so recognized for their ground game, who wouldn't want that? You know what I mean? That's just another check on my checklist.
In terms of what are, you know, obviously the immediate check on the checklist is getting the win here at the UFC on Fox show. Is there any other checklist items that you currently have written down?
I mean, after I get this win, I'd like to get a few more wins. You know, I'm trying to move my family to California, and the money's gonna be great. So if I could get a few more wins, and a bunch of bonuses to go with it, that'd be fantastic.
How tough is that for you to be training in California, but your family's not there?
It's hard at times, but not so much. You know, I'm very lucky. Like, I'm super lucky. My girlfriend saw that I was at home being a manager and that I wasn't happy, and she loves me enough to take care of everything down there. And she told me, go to California. Like, you're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to. If you want to be a gym manager, you can be a gym manager. If you want to be a fighter, get the fuck out of here. This is not where you want to be. And I'm super lucky to have her.
You know, they always talk about, you know, fighters from Hawaii and the Hawaiian fighting spirit, you know, and I know, you know, maybe fans who aren't from Hawaii have a definition of that. What is your definition of a Hawaii fighter?
We're like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You know what I mean? When you talk to us in person, you meet us, we're the nicest people. We'll give you the shirt off our back. We'll go out of our way to help you in anything like that. But when it's time to fight, you best believe that we're going to fight and we're going to give you hell and we're going to give you everything we have from bell to bell.
Final thing, Russell, and I really appreciate time. Been asking a lot of guys to take me back to their pro debut, which for you was all the way back in the beginning of 2008, a TKO win against Tyson Nam. What do you remember most about that night?
I was so scared, man. I remember I just won like an amateur belt, and I went to the gym. Like, I won Saturday, I went to the gym on Monday, and my coach and were like, oh, hey, you're going to fight Tyson Nam this weekend or next weekend or something. And I was like, oh, okay. But inside I was like, oh my God, do they know who Tyson Nam is? Isn't that the guy that's been kicking the shit out of everybody? And then I remember during the walkout, so I'm walking out from behind the curtains, and of course the lights are in my face and I'm kind of like, oh, I can't really see. And then the lights move, and then I see the huge crowd of people like, oh my God. Like, and I shriveled up. But then I won, and it was all cool. But before that, I've never been so scared of anything in my life.
Do you still get, I mean, I'm sure there's still those typical nerves, but is it kind of pretty much now it's to the point where it's just like, hey, man, it's just another day in the office?
Yeah, there's a little bit of nerves, you know, but I'm used to it already. You know, I know if they hit me, I can take it. If I hit them, I'm not 100% sure they can take it. So I think that's where I have that mental edge. I can take hits. I can take hits like a motherfucker. I have a huge head, and it helps and it works. But you know what I mean? I think for me, I'm not afraid of getting hit. I'm not afraid of anything anymore. I just want to get out there and perform. The nervousness comes from me checking myself and, you know, like, am I going to perform? Am I going to be myself? Am I going to do my 100%? And then you get out there and you're like, fuck yes, I'm going to do my 100%.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight come up here on Saturday night or Saturday afternoon. In your case, UFC on Fox 28, you'll be a part of the Fight Pass prelims, which start at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's obviously for your body clock. That'll be, you know, basically, you know, 12:30 Eastern time. Is it, do you like that fact of pretty much, you know, wake up, get to the arena? Do you like that schedule?
I do. I like that the UFC, they're very, like, they have their times. Like, they tell you, like, you're fighting at this time. You know what I mean? So you don't have to guess. like a smaller show, you kind of have to guess, you have to watch the matches, time everything. But the UFC is perfect, always.
Russell, really appreciate you coming on the show. Let all my listeners know where they can follow you out on social media.
You can find me, Russell Doan, 135, on Instagram, Twitter. If you guys play Counter-Strike, then you can find me, Wreck-It Russ. Come play with me.
Daniel, there was my conversation with Russell Doan. Of course, he'll be a part of the Fight Pass prelims, which start at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Saturday. Five fights on the early prelims. Going to kick off with Albert Morales against Manny Bermudez. Speaking of Albert Morales, if you go over to MMAreport.com right now, you can watch the interview that I did with him. Also, you have Alex Perez versus Eric Shelton. I have an interview with Alex Perez up on the MMAreport.com. Also, you got Sam Alvey's on those prelims. Also, Olivier Aubin-Mercier is on those Fight Pass prelims. And you got your Fox prelims at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get a kickoff with Ben Sonners, Alan Joel Blaine. Then you got Marina Moroz versus Angela Hill. Then it's Sarah McMahon versus Mary Renault. And then your feature prelim will be Hinton Burrell versus Brian Keller. Then your 4-5 main card, Mike Perry versus Max Griffin. Ovin St. Preux versus Lira Latifi. Jessica Andrade versus Tisha Torres. Then your main event, Josh Emmett versus Jeremy Stevens. You know, in terms of this fight card, I truly hope that we don't have any Ric Flair impersonations in the Amway Center on Saturday. That's one of those, like, I just, like, why do people do that?
Yeah, that was the worst part about the Texas crowd, and heard it a lot in Bellator too. And the worst part about the Woo chant is once you hear it, you can't stop thinking about it. Like, you can't, like, it just ruins the whole fight. All you are, then you just become super hyper aware every time someone says Woo. And it makes you want to just, it makes me mad. And I'm a wrestling fan, but I hate it. It's the worst. It's annoying. It's not, it's just, it's like an annoying note. You ruin the Woo. We need to have a movement. It's the movement is Stop the Woo movement, because it's just the worst thing ever. Oh. It's just people thinking they're funny, thinking they need attention. Like, listen, the problem with society, Jason, is everyone thinks they deserve attention, and no one deserves attention. All right. So just stop it with the wooing. But it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. It's going to be your biggest takeaway when we talk next week.
You know, in terms of this fight card and what interests me, you know, on the prelims, Saunders and Joe Buane, I think that's a fight that probably should deliver. Outside of that, on the prelims, in terms of fights, Moroz Hill, you know, that's one. I mean, McMahon-Renault is another fight. I mean, it has some good meaning there at 135 pounds. Main card, I love Max Perry, Mike Perry, Max Griffin fight, which is going to kick off the main card. We talked about OSP and Latifi. Andrade Torres, I clearly make the case, number one contender fight there. You know, and Josh Emmett, Jeremy Stevens, you know, to me, you know, a lot more is on the line here for Josh Emmett than Jeremy Stevens. But you look at Josh Emmett, if he can go out there and he can pull off another, you know, knockout win, it's a guy that I think no question would be, you know, right in line after the winner of Ortega and Edgar.
Yeah, Josh Emmett, man. Main event on Fox. Man, if I told you that they got the poster wrong and the guy that was Josh Emmett actually, like, they just had a different picture of a different fighter. Like, they just had Felipe Arantes in Josh Emmett's face. It probably would have taken the UFC like 3 weeks to notice it, that that's not what Josh Emmett looks like, just because this is a guy who went from, you know, a guy who was just a fighter to, like, this is a top featherweight because of, you know, he took advantage of the opportunity against Ricardo Lamas, man. And now it's like, this is a beautiful bald face that everyone will know if he beats Jeremy Stevens.
And the key thing is, does he make weight? Because remember, he missed weight for the Lamas fight.
He missed weight for the Lamas fight?
Oh, yeah, he missed weight by like 3 or 4 pounds.
What's crazy is it's now impossible to remember who misses weight, because so many people do. Yeah, I remember when it was a huge deal when people would miss weight and they would get labeled. But, yeah, I totally forgot that he missed weight. And he missed weight by 3.5 pounds. I guess the difference is, like, you have an excuse, I think, sort of, if you're a late replacement. But, yeah, he's a main event headline guy, so – it would be awful for him to miss weight and then win this fight. But I guess it's better than losing the fight. I don't think he wins this fight, though, man. I think Jeremy Stephens is more of a proven commodity. And just given what we saw prior to the Lamas win, I just think looking at that Josh Emmett, contrasting it with Jeremy Stephens today, I would go with Jeremy Stephens. I think there's a reason why he's a slight favorite. And I like both him and Jessica Andrade to win their respective fights. But, you know, Tisha Torres has really been improving quite a bit. I just think Andrade is just a machine.
Look, since I'll be there in attendance, I'll be interested to see how the fans kind of react to this fight card. That to me will be interesting. You know, we talked about it a little last week. You're asking me what time I'm going to show up for these fights. We made a decision on that, Daniel.
What's that?
We're going to get there at 6 o'clock when the TV prelims start.
Wow. So you have a guy like Russell Doane on your show and you miss his fight, Jason? Oh my, the lack of professionalism out of the.
I'm going to say, if you want to find me, we'll probably be at some bar on Church Street, and we'll probably have the fights on our phone. Watch UFC Fight Pass, and then.
Oh, BS.
We'll take the stroll over to the Amway after that.
Oh, BS. You're going to be celebrating that. What's that thing you guys celebrate? Santeria, oh, Gasparilla, whatever.
Gasparilla,
you're gonna do that stupid pirate thing, probably. I don't know how it works.
Look, I'll have to fly you in for Gasparilla next year, and then you're gonna say this is the best thing ever.
There's a 0% chance of me saying it's the best thing ever. But you gotta. I mean, the crazy thing is, bro, you're gonna show up for the TV fights. I don't blame you. You're gonna have 8 fights to watch, and it's gonna be a long time. And you know, you got to get beer that isn't super expensive beforehand.
Exactly.
In your system. I mean, that's the whole point.
Like, I was thinking about it. Like, we talk about how long, you know, it is to watch MMA on TV. And I was thinking about that, you know, because we were in a mass text kind of going back, and, you know, hey, what time y'all guys want to show up for the fights? And, you know, you know, what we want to do before the fights. And I was thinking, I was like, man, if you get there for the very first fight, you're there for a good 6.5-7 hours.
And like, if you do a beer per hour, oof, that's like $70. I don't know how it's gotta be $10 beer.
Here at the Emily Arena where the Lightning play, $15 bucks.
Oh God, that's insane. That's insane. Oh my God. Yeah, you better show up for the main card, man. Oh my God, that's insane. That's crazy. Moral of the story is you're going to get really hammered. You're going to have to rewatch these fights. But
I'll tell you this, it's for a 25-ounce beer, but I'm telling you, man, it's every time it goes up, I'm like, man, people are going to stop buying beer, but no.
No, I mean, beer is an essential thing, man. Wow, that's like 2 6-packs. I guess
you're doing the math. Yeah. Yeah,
that's awful.
Yeah. If you're going to you go to a hockey game and you're going to have a beer per period, $45 before tip.
Oh man. I won't mind that when I'm rich one day, but, I'm not making that Jason Floyd money. Here's one name I'll mention. I don't know how to say his last name, but, he's from Poland. Marcin Prachnio. That's probably not how you say it. He's taking on Sam Alvey at light heavyweight.
Yeah.
Marcin is a name to watch. He may very well go there and get a first round knockout. So, you're going to miss that one, but you'll be able to watch it on Fight Pass. As long as you get in your seat by the time Ben Saunders and Alan Joe Wayne square off,
that is the plan.
That's, you'll get your money's worth. I think that fight is worth your money. The Barao fight is worth your money. And just watching a guy like him fight, Mike Perry is always entertaining. I think OSP and Latifi is either going to be really boring or end really quickly. You know, solid top 2 fights, but this is going to do a bad rating, Jason. This is going to do a bad rating.
Look, you know, I mean, our tickets were in the 100 level. They were like 115, 120, something like that. You know, as a fight fan, do I wish the car was better? Yeah. You know, but I just, you know, I think that, you know, I was listening to somebody else's show in the past couple of days, and they were just like, could you think about a couple of years ago if you would have said, you know, some of these fights would be headlining cards? I mean, you know, and I think it just shows, I mean, you know, hopefully the UFC will start to reduce the amount of cards they do, but I you know, most likely not going to happen. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, while you may not be excited for me, you just hope that, you know, when you get into your seat on Saturday and you just sit there, and at the end of the day, this is entertainment. You just hope that you're entertained.
I mean, look, I expect a full report from you. I hope you entertain Jason, but it's more than just what's happening inside the cage. You're going to be boots on the ground. The sport is in an interesting position, Jason. I need you to report on if anyone there knows who Nico Montano is. That's an important question.
Come on.
You gotta do it. You gotta do a video.
If I ask 20 people, how many do you think will? If I said who is the UFC women's flyweight champion, I asked 20 people, how many of them will correctly pick her?
Probably 3. I wonder if Dana White will know. You gotta ask Dana White and see what he says. See if he knows. Because, oh man, but yeah, tell me how many fighter kits you see. If I see more than four,
I'd be shocked.
God, there's got to be more than four. You're going to a UFC event.
Have you seen how much those things are priced at?
I know. It's abysmal.
If you have a favorite fighter, are you going out shelling out $75, $100 for their shirt?
You know, Jason, I feel like you're being real defensive here. So I feel like
being honest.
I think you may have purchased multiple Conor McGregor UFC fight kits, and you just wear it every time.
Actually, it was a couple weeks ago. I was driving somewhere and I saw someone wearing a Conor fight kit.
Yeah, was it Conor?
I wanted to pull over and start asking him questions.
Like, how did you get this?
I will tell you, because, you know, Orlando has one of those, you know, they have a bunch of outlet malls. One of them has a Reebok. And I remember the last time I was there, they actually sold UFC fighter kits. Maybe I should just go in there and see how much they cost.
You should get one. I'll buy one, too. I'll get you I don't even know. What would be a good fighter kit? You know what? I'll get you a Ilir Latifi fighter kit. Can you buy that? Is that something you can buy?
I'm sure you have to specially order that.
Oh, man.
The question would be is, here would be the interesting thing. I'll have to snap some pictures. I'll go by the merchandise stand, and let's see what fighter kits they have available.
Oh, that would actually be interesting, yeah.
We'll see. We'll report on that next week on the podcast.
Yeah, I want to make a Javier Ayala fighter kit. Can you make your own name on there?
I believe you can.
Oh, man. Will they misspell it?
Good chance.
Yeah. Oh, God. I can't wait till I'm rich so I can just buy fighter kits, man. I want to buy a Javier Ayala. Because there's no way they're going to be sponsored by Reebok in 5 years. Like, this is the golden – I don't know how long they're – like, there's no way they re-sign with Reebok, right? There's no way Reebok re-signs
with
them.
Yeah, well, if you're Reebok, why would you re-sign? But let's get into some news and notes. I reported on Sunday that a list of fighters are no longer with Bellator. Either their contracts expired or they retired, or at least that's what they told Bellator. Elsie Davis, Steve Garcia, Steve Cazola, Kendall Grove, George Carhagna, Fernando Gonzalez, Kevin Casey, Francisco France, Mike Rhodes, Francis Carbont, Philip Leans, Ben Ryder, and Alexis Dufresne, all no longer Bellator fighters. From what I was told, Dufresne and Casey both told the Bellator they were retiring. Apparently, Francis Carmont may be retiring as well, but we all know in the MMA game, you never really take that stuff serious. In preface this, they were not released. Their contract expired, and they didn't re-sign them. I mean, which you could say they got released. You know, Georgie Carhagen had said prior to his last fight that he was going to see what the market played out for him anyway, so not really surprised there. Steve Cazola, a little bit of a surprise move. I thought that maybe they'd give him another fight, but had lost back-to-back. But outside of that, you know, Philippe Lean's kind of a shock. Fernando Gonzalez, I had some people tweeting me about how surprised that. I was not surprised because the weight issue.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a joke for Fernando Gonzalez getting a fight booked that there's no way he's going to make weight. And it's just one less headache for Bellator. Just because Gonzalez as talented as he was as a fighter, and he certainly has the skill set to be a Bellator fighter, obviously. It's just like he wasn't really worth it just to have the stink of having a fighter you know is always going to miss weight. So, you know, there were a lot of names on that list. Carmont, I don't think he's going to retire, even though he said he might. I don't know. I just got a feeling he'll fight once more. I feel like the most talented guy on that list was Kirikanyan. But LC Davis is one who you're saying this guy's saying he's retired now?
No. LC,
oh, sorry.
No.
LC isn't retired.
No, okay. I mean, I would imagine guys like LC, maybe Kendall Grove, Gonzalez. I wouldn't surprise Georgie that they ultimately end up in the PFL. I mean, I know that's where, you know, obviously a lot of guys are looking at that $1 million payday. Will Brooks, who was just released by the UFC, he signed with PFL. I haven't talked to anyone who seems likes the long-term chances of the PFL.
Yeah. It seems like a get in, get out. Like, it does not appear.
Here's the thing. If Bellator is only getting the viewership they're getting on, you know, the network they're on, what's the PFL going to get on NBCSN on a Thursday night?
Well, I do think Thursday night is a better night to run, but I don't think this is going to be very successful either. Like, I would expect 300,000, 200,000 on viewership. I don't think there's much momentum on this brand.
No, I look, and I hope the PFL succeeds. I really do, but it's tough to be optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, look, Bellator's dropping the ball right now, so there is potential to capitalize on some of the issues they're doing. I just this is just not a great climate, I think, for an MMA promotion to really rise up that isn't the UFC right now. This is just – it appears as though we are in a time period where there is just not a lot of oxygen and eyeballs for this sport, and when that happens, it's always challenging. So if you want to forecast, like, it's hard to be positive, but – the hope is that there is some success there for the PFL, but realistically, if you're projecting what you should expect, it's not the greatest thing in the world.
I got a yes or no question for you. Greg Hardy, does he fight in the UFC?
He shouldn't. No, I don't think he does. I mean, just because, like, yeah, no.
The old ownership, I say no. The new ownership, I think it's a 50-50 shot.
You don't think WME, IMG is a...
Look, he shouldn't fight, in the UFC. I don't even think Bellator would take a chance on him.
Yeah. Is he signed somewhere?
He's fighting for LFA as an amateur. I think his best chance, honestly, and I've talked to some people about this, Ryzen.
Yeah. Internationally is also kind of what I would point at too. I mean, like, his name is really, it's, I mean, this dude did some bad stuff. Like,
yeah,
I mean, and this is a different America. This is America that's kind of embarrassed by its history. And it's like, there are significant consequences, you know?
I think the other part of this, and this is, you know, something I know that a lot of people have brought up, is like, you look at American Top Team and the fact of you are training somebody to compete in combat sports that has the past that Greg Hardy has.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. He's literally this guy has a past of utilizing his body to be a freaking monster. Mm-hmm. And you are improving those weapons that he has. That is, I didn't even thought about that, but it's just like, you know, I think we owe it to each other to hold each other accountable and to criticize groups for taking that on, because it's like that you should be criticized.
I mean, and he still thinks, apparently people around him think that he could still get a chance in the NFL. Nope.
No, absolutely not.
No way.
I mean,
no way.
Not the NFL, not the XFL. It's just, Yeah, it would be a step back for the UFC to sign a guy like that. And, yeah, just to open your gym doors to a guy like that, I don't know. It makes me feel bad.
Yeah, no.
But the LFA, like, the LFA, that's a significant promotion.
Yeah, that's owned by a publicly traded company.
That is totally, this is not a promotion that has a direct relationship to the UFC. Or an indirect relationship, I guess.
Indirect, I guess, would probably be a good way to say it.
Yeah, indirect, I guess. When you have kind of the change of people overseeing the promotion, do you think that strengthened or weakened that relationship between the UFC and LFA?
I think as long as LFA is essentially a feeder promotion, I mean, I think that relationship's still going to be strong.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, we see the amount of LFA fighters that have come into the UFC. So, look, we'll see what happens. Another news item mentioned, John Jones' hearing with California State Athletic Commission is set for next week on February the 27th. I can see how this one's already going down, Daniel.
How?
California is going to set one suspension. It's going to be a less suspension than what USADA puts out there. So, for instance... California, let's say, goes 1 year, USADA goes 2 years, and we're going to hear the Jones camp complaining about that.
I think that's the way it's going to play out. I heard this guy, Malki Kawa, and he told me that John Jones is scot-free, and I saw John Jones train in a garage, so I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hope this is a pretty strong commission, so I would not anticipate much influence by outside parties on their decision. It's just I'm ready for a finality on knowing how long John Jones is going to be suspended. I'm just tired of hearing all the BS excuses.
I still say I think it's 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, but we'll see what happens there. But of course, next week is UFC 222. Going to let you hear my conversations with Andre Sugnathaw and Cody Stamann. First up, you're going to hear my conversation with Andre. Of course, he is going to be on the main card on pay-per-view, taking on Sean O'Malley. Then, of course, you'll hear my conversation with Cody Stamann, who's going to be fighting Brian Caraway on the prelims. So here are my interviews with Andre Sugnathaw and Cody Stamann. Andre, as always, man, I appreciate the time. I've been talking to a couple guys who are on this fight card, and one of the things I've mentioned to them is, was there ever a concern that this fight card wasn't going to happen?
No, not for me. I thought that besides the main event being scratched, I thought that the whole fight card was pretty good. You know, you got Kat Zingano, you got myself, and you got Stefan Struve. So I thought that this fight card was pretty good. So you know, it was no concern at all for me.
And this is a fight booking that kind of, you know, really just came out of two different podcasts that came together. You know, as this fight has been building up, have you felt at all that maybe you think that Sean doesn't respect you?
Yeah, I definitely think he doesn't respect me. I don't think he respects anything. You know, he just seems like he's a punk. You know, a kid that he kind of spoon fed in my opinion, he's kind of spoon fed. This is gonna be his 10th fight, and he's in the UFC, and he's getting all this love from the UFC and stuff. That's good for him, you know. But he's a punk, he doesn't respect me. You know, whatever, fuck him. I don't respect him either.
You know, in terms of this matchup and the buzz, I guess hype could be a word that could be associated with him. Like, to me, I think that it benefits yourself here, because maybe if there wasn't that buzz and that hype, maybe this fight's not on the pay-per-view. I mean, do you kind of feel that way?
Well, you know, it goes both ways. The UFC's, you know, he asked for a pay-per-view in Las Vegas, and he got it. But I got fans, too. You know, I got some loyal fans. You know, I might not have 75 fake fans, but I got some real fans, you know what I'm saying? I got about 300 people flying out from all over the U.S. to go to my fight, you know what I'm saying? I got every single Rhode Islander, as a fan. You know what I mean? I got real fans. I got real love. I got real people on my team and behind me. You know, he's just got a bunch of stoners and a bunch of people that thinks he looks cool and he acts cool because he smokes weed and because he hangs out with Snoop Dogg. That's good for him. But I think the UFC knows, you know, he might have a bigger fan base and he might be Snoop Dogg's little homie, Dana White's little homie. But the UFC knows who the better looking guy is, who's the guy that has more swagger, and the guy that has more personality. And that's me. And they're not stupid, you know? I got a whole nation behind me.
Mentioning about your fans, you know, obviously me and you, we've been talking for some time, and I think one of the coolest stories you've ever told me was when you won the CES title where you're in the back kind of with your team and the Twin River people come and said, hey, can you at least come outside and try to get all your fans to leave the casino?
Yeah, man, it happens all the time. You know, like I said, I got real fans, you know what I mean? They've been a part of my journey. I'm talking about people that have been a part of my journey since my first amateur fight, you know, and the fan base just keeps on growing. And, you know, I got a whole country behind me. Like I said, I'm the first Laotian signed UFC fighter. And I'm like a super celebrity over there. And the UFC knows what they're doing with me, you know. And they know that whoever wins this fight is going to be the breakout star of the Manaweight division.
In terms of, you know, where you come from, have you gotten any, you know, emails, tweets of maybe someone that is, you know, a teenager that looks up to you of what you've been able to accomplish?
I've got many. You know, I got parents reaching out to me, showing me videos of their kids kickboxing and doing Muay Thai and doing MMA. I got kids from back at home that I used to counsel. Because I used to work at the Boys and Girls Club. I got kids out there reaching out to me, you know, saying thank you. And, you know, because they saw how hard I worked. I went to work and I always talked about my fighting. And, you know, there's not much that happens where I come from. You know what I mean? I come from a little small town called Woonsocket, Rhode Island, and Providence, Rhode Island. We're a small state, but, you know, we got the biggest heart. People work hard there. Nice blue-collar area where people work hard to support their families, and I give people hope, you know, to follow your dreams and do whatever you want to do. I want to spread out positivity. I want to spread love. I want to spread you know, hope. I don't know what Sean O'Malley's trying to spread, but that's what I'm trying to spread, you know. And I'm always going to stay me. I'm always going to keep it real.
In terms of coming from a small area, do you kind of feel like you're carrying that city on your back?
Hey, man, you know, I'm blessed. Woonsocket, Rhode Island, they gave me the key to the city. You know what I mean? Soon it's going to be the key to Rhode Island, and then the key to the whole country of Laos. You know, I got some goals, and all I got to do is keep on winning. And the UFC knows that if I keep on winning, they also win.
When did you get the key to the city?
I got it last year in May.
So how did that come about?
Huh?
How did that come about?
I think the mayor just saw that I do a lot for the community, and that a lot of people in the community respect and look up to me. Although I live in Florida now, you know, I'm very well known in my community, and I always try to give back whenever I can, and I think for the mayor to give me the key to the city, it gives Southeast Asians hope, because there's a lot of trouble, you know, with my people, Asian Americans, you know, and it gives us hope, and not only Asian Americans, but the people that grow up in that city, you know. If somebody from Woonsocket, Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island can make it, then anybody can, you know. I'm on TV, and there's millions of people watching me, you know, that could be anybody.
When you mentioned about this fight with Sean, I mean, you know, obviously you respect his abilities, but why do you feel you're a bad matchup for him?
I don't necessarily feel like I'm not going to say that I'm a bad matchup for him, because fight night, you know, we never know what's going to happen. You know, we both train hard to win the fight. So I don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what I'm going to do. But I know that it's going to be a really exciting fight. I can tell you that. You know, he likes to bang. I like to bang. And we're going to bang. It's going to be a great fight for the fans. And, you know, one thing that I do know I have an advantage in is my power. You know, I touch somebody once and they go to sleep. And he's going to find that out. You know, he might be faster. He might be flashy. But I got the power, man. And power is a motherfucker.
When you head out to Las Vegas, how much of your preparations will you do at the Performance Institute?
We'll see, man. We'll see how far. It's kind of far from the Strip. But I definitely want to get a day or two there just because I like the vibes there. It's such a great facility. I probably want to go and use the sauna there, the jacuzzi, go get some free T-shirts, you know. So I'm definitely going to go do some work out there, even get some food. I like the staff there. I like the vibes there, like I said. And I'm going to use it to my advantage. You know, only UFC fighters can go there. I'm a UFC fighter. Like I said, a small kid from Woonsocket, a loud kid. I'm going to go and use my – I'm going to take advantage of that place.
I remember when we talked prior to your last fight, which you took on short notice, and you mentioned me. You said, look, I know my back's against the wall. I know my job's on the line here. As you think about your mindset heading into that fight and now your mindset heading into this fight, how different is it? Or is it still kind of the same mentality of I have to treat every fight like, you know, this, you know, my job's on the line?
Man, my last fight, it was no thinking. No, you know, no time to think. It was just to get to work. You had a bad day in practice, get to work. It doesn't matter. You need to win this fight. So this fight, it's similar, but, you know, I'm going to be honest, the feeling, you know, it's going to be my first fight on my new five-fight contract, you know. So I'm looking more at the opportunities. You know, I'm placed pretty high in the main card. First of all, you know, I never been on pay-per-view, so I'm going to be on pay-per-view. And it's a chance for me to really expose myself and shoot down the hype train and take his hype. And when I take his hype, I'm going to do great things, you know, not just for me, but for everybody that follows me and supports me.
And, of course, it's going to be the third fight on the pay-per-view right before the co-main event between Frankie Edgar and Brian Ortega. Andre, man, as always, I appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing your fight. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Thanks, Jason. Hey, make sure you guys follow me on Andre Souk MMA on Twitter and Instagram. People really like my stories that I put on IG. So, you know, follow my camp. And don't be shy. Say what's up. I reply sometimes.
Cody, I appreciate the time, man. I got, you know, as we're talking, it was just a couple of days ago. This card was kind of up in air. It was, yeah. You know, Max was out. What are they going to do as a main event? For you, as a guy who's on the card, I mean, are you going to your management going, hey, guys, what's going on? Am I still fighting Marstert? Or am I being moved to another date? How'd that kind of go?
I kind of just pushed it aside. I was like, you know what, you know, whether it does or does not happen, you know, training hard right now isn't going to kill me. So I kind of put it in the back of my mind and just kind of prayed and hoped that, you know, the UFC would find somebody for that headliner. And obviously they did. You know, that's just such a volatile sport, you know, like that you never really know what's going to happen. And I mean, fights drop off a week of, you know, I'm just happy that I'm not happy that he got hurt, but I'm happy that there was enough time that, you know, they could replace the Holloway Edgar fight.
And, you know, speaking of, you know, fighters pulling out, as I'm the producer of the Valor Hour, when you were on that show, one of the things that you had mentioned was, hey, I'm concerned that he's not going to make it the fight night. Are you still concerned about that, or can you just not worry about it?
Yeah. Like I said, it's another thing. It's like that was a really big worry of mine when I first took this fight. I'm like, well, man, he's pulled out of his last, you know, two fights. And then, you know, I think he's had a history doing that before. I'm like, man, well, if he doesn't show up, I'm preparing for a specific style and, you know, that matchup. But the thing that would really, really bum me out if Brian Caraway doesn't show up is the fact that he's a top 10 guy. And that's the kind of fight I want. And I'm sure it'd be pretty hard for him to get another guy on, you know, we're going on 3 weeks notice. It'd be hard to get another top 10 guy in there. The only thing that worries me is now we're running out of time. If he got hurt, there's a chance that I might not even fight. So I'm praying that he's healthy and well.
And obviously this is the type of matchup you've been looking for. You know, a guy in that top 10. I know you've done other interviews where you've talked about why you love this matchup, why you feel like you've been had this type of fight all your career. But when you're facing a guy who's, you know, had a layoff, I mean, Brian's a vet of this sport. I don't think he's going to come out and drastically be a different fighter. But, you know, what's the biggest challenges when taking on a guy who you haven't seen for a little while?
Like you said, I don't think there's going to be much of a change in his game. I'm pretty sure he's going to be the exact same fighter. And even if he did add tools, it won't make a damn bit of difference. When we get in there, I'm going to beat this guy all over the place. I just know that I've been working way too hard. You know, I look at Brian kind of like he's a vet. Obviously, I respect him as an athlete. He's done a lot in the sport, but you know, he's 33. He hasn't really fought much in the last few years. I feel like he's not really that hungry athlete that I am, and that makes a huge difference, man. The mentality is everything in this sport. I've seen it with a lot of guys. You know, when they're young and you're hungry, you know, you go out and you beat anybody, but then the sport wears on you. I mean, it's a hard sport. And then as guys get, you know, further into their career, they're just showing up for a paycheck. And I think, you know, that's kind of what he's doing.
I mean, look, fighting is a career. And I think everyone can relate to, there's just days that you're just like, man, I do not feel like getting up. I don't feel like going to the office. For you, when you have those kind of days, what is the motivation to ultimately get into the gym for one, two, or three workouts a day?
So when I'm having I don't really ever have to have issues with, you know, getting motivated. A lot of times it's just like I wake up and I'm like, I'm so sore, I can't move. You know, my body's like, dude, just lay back down, skip this one. The biggest thing for me is just getting there. Like once I'm there, it's kind of like, well, damn, I'm here. I got to do something now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I feel like that's the challenge. It's like getting up and in Michigan right now, I mean, we have like snowstorms every other day. So you got to get up. I mean, literally it's like a chore just to get into your car. You got to get the snow off and shovel the walkway, all these things, you know, just to get to the gym. You know, that's the hardest part, is just getting up, getting in the car and getting to the gym. Once I'm there, I'm good. But there's been, especially late in the training camp, you know, I'm starting to get tired. I'm kind of peaking now. I'll start cooling off a little bit these next few weeks. This is kind of like my last really, really hard week. And this is the time when it's really like, this morning I was like, oh man, snowstorm. Maybe I'll take this morning off, but I just couldn't, you know, I talked myself out of it.
Yeah, I was watching an interview that Liam McGarry recently did, and he was talking about, because he lives in New York, and he was talking about how he hates the cold and kind of the various, you know, what can be the challenges of training in a cold climate as opposed to a warm climate. And he mentioned about, really, it's about that, you know, getting warmed up, and you really got to do a lot of that. For you, do you kind of understand what he's talking about in terms of how warming up in a cold climate is really key?
No, it's a real thing, because you figure granted, you're going from a heated car to a heated gym, but, you know, you got to go in the freezing cold, and it is harder to get warmed up. But also, I feel like, you know, the cold weather, I feel like it makes you tough. I don't know, something about people from the Midwest and people that have to deal with this BS weather, you know, it might make them a little bit meaner, but I think it makes you a little bit tougher too. You know, honestly, my warm-ups, I get, you know, when it starts getting cold, I'll get to the gym an hour early and just start loosening my body up for, you know, an hour before practice, you know, just to prevent injuries and all these things. I think that's one of the biggest keys in the cold climate, is that you got to get early, you got to get a warm up, because, you know, cold muscles, cold joints, that's how things break. So you need to take the time and get that warm up.
Being someone who's lived in Florida all my life, I can't deal with the cold. You know, it'll be like 80,
you're lucky, man.
89 degrees. I'm like, oh man, I want to get cold. And then it gets cold for about 3 days. I'm like, okay, I'm over it.
Yeah.
Done. I'm over it.
Yeah, you guys have great weather. Outside of a few hurricanes every now and then, that's a great place.
I tell you, I've grown up around it, so it's, you know, I mean,
it's probably like a snowstorm for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, in a way. I mean, it's just we've been around your whole life. You just kind of, you know how to prepare for it, and right. You know, you take the precautions. But, you know, Brian, obviously, people think of his wrestling. You know, that's the big thing that people think about. His MMA wrestling, where does it stack up in terms of guys that you've competed against previously?
I don't know that. I think that like the best part of my MMA game is my MMA wrestling, my ability to take people down and not get taken down. 37 fights. I've maybe been on my butt one time ever, and I got up the second my butt hit the mat. You know what I mean? I don't give up takedowns in fights. Even against guys that are you know, elite level wrestlers, you know, this is like that's the kind of grimy guy that you fight when you're from the Midwest. You fight guys that are wrestler boxers or wrestler brawler type guys. I mean, because that's literally what we do here. Like, that's what the Midwest is known for. The Big Ten, we're known for wrestling. You know what I mean? Everyone around here wrestles. Maybe it's just because it's cold and there's nothing else to do. I don't know what it is, but. You know, we're wrestlers, and I don't think the guys on the East Coast are as good as, or I'm sorry, on the West Coast are as good as, you know, the guys around here. So, there's really nothing. I feel like there's no surprise for me. There's nothing that he's going to shoot a double leg and he's going to, you know, push me against the cage. I know exactly what he's going to do. He's done it in every single one of his fights, you know, so that's an easy thing to prepare for. You know, so if I get taken down, I'm going to be getting back up. You know, I'm not going to be one of those guys that, you know, plays a guard game or, you know, let somebody like, you know, take my back and grind me out. And that's the kind of fight that Brian really likes. And I'm really good at avoiding those positions. That's why I think it's such a good matchup for me.
Bantamweight division is kind of, it's a little stalled at this moment, because it does appear that TJ and Demetrius are going to fight at some point. But I mean, you've risen extremely fast, you know, since coming into the UFC last year. You know, obviously a win here puts you, you know, top six, top seven. I mean, is part of the goal mindset of, hey, by the end of this year, I want to be in a number one contender fight?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, five fights, that was kind of the what I thought I could do in five fights. I thought I could be, you know, in contention for the belt. That was always been the goal. I've never been one of those guys that kind of wanted to, you know, stick around in the top 20, just floating around, fighting, win, losing. I wanted to be a contender, and I wanted to be the best. I didn't get in this sport to be second. Obviously, that's no short glass of water. There are a lot of really tough guys at 135. I mean, I'd say some of the best guys in the world, pound for pound, at 135. There's really, really tough athletes. So, you know, it's not going to be a cakewalk, but, you know, I'm up for it. Brian Carey's the first guy, you know, he's the guy that puts me in the top 10. And then after that, you know, the hard work's really just getting started.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to see this fight come up here at UFC 222 on Saturday night, March 3rd in Las Vegas. Of course, headlined by Chris Cyborg defending the women's featherweight title. Cody, as always, man, I appreciate time, and let everyone know where they can follow you at on social media.
Yeah, everything. It's Cody Stamann, CodyStamann. Yeah, thanks for taking the time, and I look forward to putting on a show via Brian Carey's expense.
Daniel, there you have my conversations with Andre Sukumthaw and Cody Stamann. Thanks to both those guys for giving me time late last week to talk to them about their fights at UFC 222. Of course, we'll have more about that card next week on the podcast. Do want to kind of mention some notable fight bookings before we get out of here on this podcast. Vitor Belfort, Lyoto Machida is official for UFC 224, and no issues with that fight booking.
I feel like we talked about that hypothetical fight the last time one of these two guys fought. And it's a hard for me to get excited about Machida after him against Anders, but I'm excited for this fight. I think it's the perfect recipe for what both these guys need going forward as they kind of end their UFC runs, and there's a chance a lot of things don't happen. This could be a very boring fight, you know? Lyoto could just avoid every strike, and it could go five rounds, but we could get a gruesome knockout. So I think Vitor Lyoto is a fine fight, and what's the type of card this is again?
That'll be a pay-per-view card. They're not the main event.
Oh, okay.
They want the rumor main event is Amanda Nunes and Raquel Pennington.
Ish. Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately for Raquel, she's been gone. I mean, Raquel's never a name. She's a rightful contender, but never really a name. And unfortunately for Raquel, she spent so much time away after the accident she had.
Well, and the thing about that pay-per-view is the week after Canelo GGG.
Yeah. Yeah, there is no. Oh, man.
And also that night you have a Bellator card on Paramount Network. So I have to imagine that a lot of people will likely. Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see how the card ends up, you know, playing out. But you'd have to think, you know, right now, paper people may, you know, sit at home and watch the Bellator card.
I mean, what is that, a heavyweight tournament fight?
King Mo and Ryan Bader.
Oh, yeah.
My guess is Aaron Pico will probably be on that card with it being in San Jose. You know, you probably see, you know, AKA guys, that type of thing. Yeah, probably John Fitch, if he ends up signing with Bellator, would probably be on that card as well.
Wow. Yeah.
Not saying people are going to go out of their way to watch a John Fitch fight because his style is a style that just a lot of people don't care for.
Yeah, I have zero excitement about John Fitch. He's just not a guy I would build promotion around. But, you know, I give him credit as a fighter who has, you know, you look at Thiago Alves and you look at John Fitch, and I think John Fitch is doing slightly better than Alves at this point in time. These are two guys who are very much peers. As they were at one point, I mean, you used to look at the welterweight division and it was 1-2-3 GSP, Fitch, and Alves. But poor John Fitch, man. I mean, you got to think this guy hates GSP, right? Because GSP didn't exist. We're talking about a former UFC welterweight champion.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, Fitch, I mean, what is he, 38, 39 years old, I want to say?
Yeah, he's got to be up there because it's not like he must have been in his early 30s. He is currently 39 years old, so. You know,
yeah, we'll see what happens there. A fight booking, I'm just going to mention primarily because you probably shouldn't put out lies on social media. Magomed Sharipov is going to take on Bochniak at UFC 223. And prior to this fight booking, it was a tweet from Zabat's social media that labeled and tagged certain fighters who had, quote unquote, turned down the fight. One of those fighters listed was Andre Feely, and Andre Feely responds, yeah, was never offered a fight. Yeah, if you're going to put a tweet out like there, you got to make sure it's right. And, yeah, not really a smart move there by, I don't think that was, you know, Zabat that put that tweet out. I'm pretty sure it was his manager who put that tweet out. And, you know, once again, you shouldn't tweet from your fighter's account about inaccurate information where it can be proven wrong. I got a good chuckle when I saw that.
Yeah. This tweet has so many words in it from Zabit. But I can't believe how much social media interaction this tweet from Zabit has. I mean, he has 366 retweets, 1,060 likes, and it did take Feely 3 days to respond, which is
Feely's not really an active guy on Twitter, if you really
guess. Yeah. I'm just disappointed his tweets only have like 47 retweets, but yeah,
I was one of them.
You're one of them. Yeah. Why lie?
Especially when you get proven wrong, you know?
I know. Well, yeah. There's no way. Managers got to stop tweeting stupid stuff for fighters. You know, that also goes for Cyborg's manager.
Also, if you're going to tweet for multiple of your fighters accounts, you should change up your writing style because you're really telling yourself when it's you writing those tweets.
That's true.
It's something I noticed as someone who writes things. A non-UFC fight to mention, and this is going to be at Ryzen's card, I believe in May. Koji Horiguchi, Ian McCall.
Wow.
I might have to sit up till 4 o'clock in the morning and watch that fight.
Yeah. I remember we had a guy email us. He was like the biggest Ryzen fighting fan ever. Bro, I'm stoked, Ryzen fan. Thank you. I you are right. Ryzen may be the number 2 promotion. Because of that one fight. But seriously, though, that is a great fight because that is like you look at the UFC flyweight rankings, and I think Kyoji Horiguchi would be real, real high up there. And Ian McCall, maybe not so much. It does seem like maybe, you know, his prime was like right when the division started. But all you can hope for is Horiguchi gets solid challengers, and it's not going to get much better than Ian McCall outside of the UFC. So I'm looking forward to that. I may not wake up or stay up for that. I'll probably watch that, you know, when I wake up the day after. But that's a great fight for Ryzen. That's the kind of fight they need. They need to do those fights. They need to do tournaments. And they need to do freak show fights also. I think that's a strategy.
And I'll be looking forward. Of course, that's not till May, which May will probably be here before you even realize it. It's almost March already.
So depressing. The passage of time is so depressing.
But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Do want to thank Russell Doan, Andre Sugarhaw, and Cody Stamen all coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, this podcast comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. Coming up next week on the podcast, we will get you ready for UFC 222. Plus, we'll talk about what happens on this coming Saturday at UFC on Fox 28.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I've never been one to politicize any tragedy, especially right after it happens. Before families could mourn and lay their family members to rest or even grasp what happened, you had those on the left who immediately started talking gun control, especially as it relates to mental illness, because they say all the signs were there. We can have this gun debate, this gun law debate, until we're all blue in the face, until we beat that dead horse back to life. But I say no, and here's why. Current gun laws ask those questions. Have you been deemed mentally incompetent? And it's a yes-no question. The majority of the people who really want to buy a gun are not going to say yes. And if that person says no, there is nothing that allows the gun shop to call every psychiatric facility in that county or in that state to say, hey, has Nicholas Cruz ever been a patient at your facility?
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.